few of us here. Where we don't have to. Hey, if I don't have to use the microphone, that'd be great if you just come up. I don't know if I can talk. I don't want to use the microphone. Are you okay back there? Okay. Okay. Well, we appreciate. I saw it. Stand backwards and don't block the screen. We appreciate your attendance here tonight. I don't know if there was something else going on or if it just wasn't that interesting.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
There was only one notice in the paper. That was last week.
Only
there was
one
no
notice?
Notice in the government sections in the city. So I would say, how would a lot of the people have known about this meeting? Unless they might really have to
do
last week's
meeting. Were they supposed to do it twice?
Yes. There was one
note. One. Well, we'll take that back and see what happened. I don't know if that's all they were supposed to advertise. I would assume they would
have
put it
twice.
Well, I'm not sure there. Yeah. Well, whatever the reason, I apologize if we didn't get proper notice there. We would have liked to have seen a much bigger turnout for what we're discussing here. My name's Kurt Best. I'm the regional engineer for water rights out of Cedar City. And the purpose of the meeting is to discuss the appropriation policy for the Escalante River drainage. In particular, that policy as it relates to the immediate area surrounding the town of Escalante. To begin with, I'll just discuss a few basic water right principles. We'll kind of set the stage for what we're going to present. Then we can discuss, when we're all done, the issues here. First of all, water rights in Utah are governed based upon the prior doctrine of prior appropriation. The doctrine of prior appropriation basically means water is diverted for a beneficial use. The water right itself has a priority date set with that water right, and according to the doctrine of prior appropriation, those who establish their right first in time are first in right. In other words, those with the earliest priority are entitled to their full supply of water before anybody with a later priority gets anything. And that's the basic principle of the doctrine of the prior appropriation. A few basic definitions. All water in the state is property of the public. Also, beneficial use shall be the basis, the measure, and the limit of the right to use water in the state. That's according to statute. How we establish water rights. There are four main ways to establish a water right. First of all is by diligence claim. And a diligence claim refers to surface water that was put to beneficial use prior to 1903. 1903 was when the law was enacted governing surface water. So anything that was in place prior to that is diligence, a diligence claim. So if you were using that water prior to 1903, and have continued to use that, you can claim diligence and establish that right. We don't see many of them come in now because the problem there is you have to provide evidence back prior to 1903 to establish that right. It's kind of hard to do that at this point. The second method is filing an underground water claim. An underground water claim refers to groundwater use prior to 1935. 1935 was when the law was enacted to regulate groundwater. So if you had drilled a well prior to 1935 and put it to beneficial use, you could establish that right by filing an underground water claim. The same as a diligence claim now, if you wanted to file that, you would have to provide that evidence that has been used prior to 1935 and has continually been used uninterrupted. Next, you can get a water right by court decree. This typically happens through an adjudicative process involving the courts and us, the state engineer's office. And finally, probably the most common method of obtaining a water right is filing an application to appropriate with the state engineer's office. Section 73-3-8 of the statute is where we find the criteria for approving or rejecting applications to appropriate, as well as change applications in the state engineer's office. First and foremost, you need to show that there's unappropriated water available in the source to be able to develop that source. Your development cannot impair the existing rights in the area around there. So if you're going to develop a source that would adversely affect your neighbor, that would be grounds for denial of that. The application cannot be filed for the purpose of speculation or monopoly, and it has to be for with the public interest or welfare in mind. This is a map showing pretty much the appropriation policy for the state of Utah. As you can see, the entire I-15 corridor is fully appropriated. You cannot file for water within that area. The Colorado River drainage, which is shown there in yellow, which this is part of, is open to small appropriations. Okay, the Colorado River policy was established in March 1990. Basically, the policy limits new appropriations to small domestic filings, one domestic, a quarter acre of irrigation, 10 head of livestock, or the equivalent amount of water for some other use. Okay. Right now, we currently have a closed area surrounding the town of Escalante. Regarding this closed area, looking back in our old policy manuals, this is all we could find regarding that closure. It says the only restriction in the 97 area has been to exclude that portion described as the developed agriculture areas where applications are being held. That's kind of vague. It's left to personal interpretation. Where is that line? So in 1996, January 1996, a memorandum was issued drawing a boundary to that excluded area. That boundary is what you see here. Everything within that blue area is closed to new appropriation around the town of Escalante. Everything outside of that area is still open to small appropriations governed by the Colorado River policy. That's essentially where we're at today with the current policy. That area is closed. The majority of their area is still open to the small appropriations. At this point, I'm going to turn the time over to Jamie Greer. He's an engineer from our technical services department, and he's going to talk a little bit about the hydrology of this area.
Thanks, Kurt. So they asked me to look at this policy and kind of reevaluate looking at the hydrology of the system and the water rights that we have appropriated here in the system. Use clip, I think, twice. So by looking at the hydrology, we look at many different studies that have been done here to try to determine how much water has been recharging into the system near the town of Escalante and the aquifers, the underground aquifers, and where that water is essentially discharging from the ground back into the stream, the surface system. Here in the area, most of the recharge occurs in the mountains, like most places in Utah, through precipitation falling on snow, rain, up on the mountains to seep down into the mountain block, up through the ground, into the alluvial fill. And in this area, which is pretty unique, is that you have your sandstone aquifers underlying all the ground out here. So the water will flow through that underground sandstone up to be eventually discharged at a couple different places, either through wells or flow actually discharging back into the Escalante River. That's the main recharge and discharge source for the area, through the mountain block precipitation, flowing through the valleys up and eventually discharging to the Escalante River down to the Colorado. Hit the next slide and you could hit one, two, and three. There have been three principal studies that have been done that include this area. In 1969, the USGS, actually, I brought them here. It was the Utah Geological Survey, did a study, a reconnaissance of the area near the town of Escalante. This is the only study that we have that actually focuses on this area. But it was done so far in the past that it didn't really get into the groundwater of the area. It mostly focused on the surface water resources that we have in the valley and tried to determine if there was any more water available on the surface for appropriation or if there was any more water that we could capture to allow for more appropriation. It did talk about the groundwater, but it didn't focus upon it. In 1976, DW, the Division of Water Right Resources, did a study just kind of giving an inventory of the Escalante River Basin as a whole. Once again, they didn't focus much on groundwaters, mostly on surface water, but they did mention it. Not until 1986 did a study done by the USGS for the State Engineer's Office, did they actually focus more on the groundwater conditions of the area. This study, can you hit the next button? This study only, it looked at a broader area, but most of the area that it discretized to was this boundary shown here, the whole Escalante River drainage. And that's as localized as it got to understanding the area. They did give some estimates of how much water was recharged to the groundwater system here, but they focused on the lower sandstone aquifers and didn't mention much about the alluvial aquifers that are mostly used here in the valley. And once again, what they had noticed in their studies that most of the water recharges up in the boulder, along the northern parts in the higher mountain areas, slowly seeps through and eventually will discharge back to the Escalante River to flow down to the Colorado. I think for a total number, they roughly estimated for this whole area, there's about 32,000 acre feet of water flowing through the groundwater system. That's for that whole area, for all the aquifers. Go to the next slide. What these studies do have is they have a pretty good understanding of the aquifer units themselves. They don't know how much water is actually flowing through the aquifers, but they have understanding. If you can see here, right there, that thin sliver right at the top, it's kind of in red. There's just a very thin alluvium aquifer here, valley fill. There's not much. But right beneath that, there's a sandstone aquifer called the Entrada Sandstone, which is a pretty good water-bearing unit. I think most of the wells here are completed to near the top of that unit, that aquifer. There's a confining layer under that water doesn't flow through very easily, called the Carmel Formation, and then under that is the Navajo Sandstone Aquifer, which in this area is pretty deep around here. But in many other areas of that study boundary that they looked at, it actually is near the surface, and it's shown to yield pretty good amounts of water. Around here, it's pretty deep, and I don't know if we've heard that the water quality isn't too well to be used, but there is an option there. So that's basically all we know about the hydrology of the system. It's from those main studies. We know that there's water moving through these aquifers. They flow from the northern south through this valley down to eventually discharge somewhere into the Escalante River through springs or right to the river itself. So now I want to look a little bit at the water rights, how much water we have actually appropriated in this area. I wanted to focus in here on the Escalante, around the town of Escalante. Key click again. Right there is showing the boundary for the moratorium, where there are no new appropriations available. If you click again, these are all the drainages that would eventually drain through this area. Okay, if you look upgrading of that boundary, this is where all the water would be flowing through the system. Eventually flow through this valley, down either to the Escalante or down through Alvey Wash, down back to the Escalante River eventually. So, if you click again, we looked at two boundaries. First, the moratorium boundary that we have there in purple or red, and this total hydrologic boundary, or the total area where water would be contributing to the moratorium boundary. So, go ahead, Nathan. We overlaid the points of divergence. Here's showing all the points of divergence that are approved points of divergence in this area. The blue are surface points of divergence. Most of those are stock watering, point-to-point allotments up in the higher mountain regions. And the red are underground points of divergence. So by taking these points of divergence, we can then overlay each of those boundaries and determine how many water rights were approved in those boundaries. And then we can sum up how much water, actual water, has been approved to be diverted from each of those areas. So it tabulated that information. There are, in the larger area, the hydrographic drainage shown on the top, there's a total of 719 water rights, 73 which are underground wells, with a total diversion of 22,000 acre-feet, roughly, and 1,449 acre-feet of underground diversion, but only about 629 of depletion, and 13,000 acre-feet of depletion when you're talking about surface and underground. So if we just focus on the underground, the water that would be coming through wells, you hit OK there, you have the rights to divert 1,449 acre-feet of water. And you have the right to only deplete about 629 acre-feet of water in that whole hydrologic boundary. So what that means, you can divert it and apply it to your fields or deploy it, and your crops will only use about 629, and the return flow back to the system will be the difference between that diversion and depletion number. So essentially, what we look at in water rights is that we have approved about 629 acre-feet of water to be consumed in that whole area. Okay? Now, if you look at just the moratorium boundary, of course it drops. There's 130 water rights approved. Only 37 of those are from underground sources. For underground, you have about 530 acre-feet of diversion and about 225 acre-feet of depletion. So, usually what we do in an area is we'll take how much water has been recharged into the system, how much we've approved, and try to get those two to match up so that we're using what's ever available through that groundwater system. It's hard in this area because we don't really have enough information or the studies to determine how much really is recharging this area. So in the past, we've taken the approach, based on this previous policy, to limit the growth, limit the amount of water appropriated because we weren't quite sure how much was available. Now that we have a better understanding of how much we've actually permitted, we want to reevaluate that policy. And using these numbers, we're here to discuss that. Another indicator that we like to use to determine if we've appropriated too much water in an area is we'll take water level readings in wells over the long time frame and see if they're going down, going up, what's happening. Here in the valley, we only have one water well, monitoring well, that's done by the USGS. And that's up by near White Hollow Reservoir. And we understand it's up above where most of the use is actually occurring. Without that well that we've been monitoring, we haven't noticed any sort of drops. Basically, it's fluctuated based on wet and dry cycles. It has gone down a little bit in the recent past, but we just feel that's probably more of an issue with the dry cycle that we went through a couple years back. That's basically all the information that we have. If you want to select the next slide, if it'll allow you to. All this information we put up on our website, all of the water right information, those tables. Well, I'll provide a list of all the water rights with their information, how much they're available to divert and deplete. These studies that we looked at, they're all online to view and read. All this information, this presentation, and we recorded it, will be there for other people to listen to if they didn't get the notice to come tonight. That's all I have.
Appreciate that, James. So what does all this mean? Essentially, we feel there is water still to develop, to appropriate here within this system, even within that closed boundary around the town of Escalante. So based on what we've looked at, based on the water right information, as far as we can tell, there's water to appropriate here, and there's no reason why it shouldn't be appropriated. So we're thinking about reopening that closed area to small appropriations governed by the larger Colorado River policy, which would be limited to the single domestic filings of one family, quarter acre of irrigation, 10 head of livestock, or an equivalent amount. The reason we're here is we want your input into that. At this point, maybe we'll throw it open if you have some comments or some concerns, anything that you can give us to help us reevaluate this policy. So any questions or comments, I'll throw it open to you at this time.
Can we go ahead and start those applications and maybe look at on number one?
Well, if you notice that, if you notice that, we're leaving it open until July 31st for comments. So we'll at least give it that amount of time to receive your comments on it. It may take us a while to evaluate those comments, I can't say whether we're going to change it, whether we're not going to change it. We will evaluate the information we have. At some point, we'll at least respond to as what, if we're going to change the policy, there will be a written policy change.
Then you still submit application, and they'll go through a protest period of things if they want to remove something.
Yeah, if you have some, but there again, we can't guarantee we're going to open it up to appropriation. And how long it'll take us to evaluate?
I don't know how long we.
It may take a while.
If it's within that boundary, would you want an explanation in addition to the regular stuff on the?
I think if it's within that boundary, if we open it up, you're fine. If not, you know, we're still under the current policy.
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of whether or not we change that policy. I don't think you need any explanation there. I think you just file your application.
Just
keep in mind, until we actually change the policy, there'd be no guarantee.
Yeah.
Yes?
What if you're outside that OPA area? I have a half section which is outside of it.
If you're outside of that area, it's still open to the... See, that's the thing. That small area around Escalante is closed right now. Everything outside that is open. So you can still appropriate under the Colorado River policy outside that boundary.
Do you think the boundaries not fall within Escalante State limits?
Yeah.
So that closed thing comes to that whole area?
Yeah. And what we're saying is potentially we may do away with that closed area, so that whole area is now open to appropriation. I don't know that means you can go within the town of Escalante and file an application to appropriate and drill a well. You still got to work through the town there to get approval, building permits, and so forth. So the town still has some control there within the city limits. Yes?
You're still going to say about whether there's opportunity to open that, so you're not sure where the other. Why was it closed?
Why is it closed? We would like to know that. And, you know, next one right there. That's all we have that tells us why it was closed. And I can't find anything in our records that tells us why they closed it originally. In 96, they drew the boundary around just in response to this statement right here in the policy. So... If you have something to enlighten us on why that was closed initially, if there was a valid reason, please share that with us. But we can't find anything. And based on what we're looking at, we think there's still water there to appropriate.
I think we think that they just felt that they might have over appropriated and felt the complete record. It's hard to determine how many water rights were actually available to appropriate in there. So the computer came online and you could make sense of what you had there. So I think they were concerned, and so they kind of took a
probably
approach
to
the area.
Well, probably a proactive approach there. I think if we did open it up, we would like to probably monitor a little closer than we have, wouldn't we, James? If we can get funding or access, or I don't know how that will work, but typically the Colorado River policy, as you notice, it's limited to just single domestic filings, a small filing. So you're not going to get one large filing that's going to have a drastic effect on the system. So we can watch it, and if there's some adverse effects to the appropriation policy, we could shut it down if we saw that. I mean, we could monitor, or rely on you guys to let us know if your wells are dropping or how that's affecting. But that's kind of the approach we would take. Yes.
Do you have to have water to your lot to develop a lot of Utah? Or can you have a dry lot? Or a dry for home there?
There's lots of cabins that haul water.
Yeah. Keep in mind, you're subject there to the your county or your town communities there. on what they receive. I mean, you still have to go through their permitting process to build there. So if their policies allow it, yeah, we have dry lot subdivisions on the mountains in several areas. People haul water to cabins.
The health department, they say on the books they allow it, but they really discourage it.
Yeah, some counties allow, some others don't. I mean, it really is county by county or community by community basis there. Obviously, to get water on the property, you have to have a water right, and that's where we come into it. But if you have no source of water the way there, then you'd have to deal with those other permitting entities.
Are you planning any more hydrologic studies?
Not at this
time. No. And I would assume that most of our funding is going to more critical areas. And that's true, Matt?
Yeah. They originally thought that was 32,000 in this range.
Not in this range.
There's a wide margin.
And I don't know where you would be on the list on getting to the point where we'd actually do a study there.
Big list.
Yeah.
Can you file a second application on the tract of land?
Second application?
Now, this is turned into an LLC for multi owners.
One thing you have to be careful with here is we watch with this small filing process, which is limited to single domestics. First of all, it's based on an immediate need for water. So if you're going to say, "Oh, 20 years from now, I may build a house there," don't even bother coming into our office, because we approve them for 5 years only. You have 5 years to develop it and file proof. And you have to have a very good explanation of why you'd get an extension beyond those 5 years. So it's based on an immediate need for water. So if you already have a water right on that property, first of all, we would like to see you perfect that, file proof on that, before you file another one. If you have that water right perfected and proved up on, yeah, then you can come in and file an additional application.
But for additional use, it's not the same use as an already existing.
Yeah. If you already have a home there, you can't file for a home unless you're going to build another home.
Attractive land down here, and there's some individuals that cut it off. But the welcome is that they've got only suffice two out of the four people that are coming considering building. And what they're looking at is it's kind of limited.
So there's multiple lots?
Well, right now it's the one thing they just barely purchased it, and they're starting to, and they have until next year to act on their application. And they're looking at doing well and stuff, but it will only you know, furnish enough for two out of four. And at this point, there would be a consideration for a second application.
Well, first of all, the property would have to be subdivided to allow more than one.
Well, see, that's kind of like the first
thing. And that would have to take place before they come in and file an application with us. They'd have to follow that procedure because, you know, they're not going to grant a building permit on a lot for multiple. You know, I don't know what the policies are here, but I would assume they wouldn't. The big problem here is as you saw, the law clearly states that, you know, we can't approve it for speculative purposes. It really is based on an immediate need for water. I have this property. I want my home right now. I'm ready to build. That's what the policy is for that. If you don't know what your plans are, and you're saying, "Oh, maybe down the road I'll do that," you shouldn't be filing with us. You should wait until you are ready to build to do that. Any other questions? Comments? Yeah, go back to the address there. And please tell your neighbors about this. They can go to our website and find, they can listen to what we presented. They can view the presentation. We're allowed until July 31st to comment. That's the address where you can submit comments to us. We were hoping a larger turnout here, obviously. Something that that will affect the community this much. Please get the word out if you can. I think we'll move forward one way or another depending on whatever we get. But we didn't want to sneak in and do something here. We wanted to make this a public policy change. I hope they follow the proper procedures on advertising. You got to be a little concerned with it. So I thought it was supposed to advertise twice, but I could be wrong.
Well, from what I understand, the delivery of the paper is sometimes sporadic. Whereas you get today's paper or yesterday's paper today, the day before yesterday's paper, the day after tomorrow.
No. If you advertise in the Spectrum, we don't get the Spectrum here. We only get the paper out of...
It wasn't advertised in the Spectrum.
Okay. It was only last week when I thought that you would be against this.
It was the Garfield County Insider.
Yeah.
That's the paper we advertised.
It was not in today. It came out today. It was not in there. The public notice. So the only notice was last week.
Because our advertising request for the paper, I know, took place at the very first
time. Yeah, I will go back to the Garfield Press and say,
We supposedly submitted plenty of time to get it out there,
yeah.
A couple of times.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that there are not more people here to hear
it. I'm not positive. We're going to require a paper to send verification of that advertisement.
Did you verify?
Yeah. So we will get their verification when that published.
Yeah, to be a public meeting, I understand it has to be published at least twice.
Yeah. And you know, our staff, the lady that took care of that Salt Lake, was following that procedure very carefully. Not only did we advertise in the paper, we gave notice to the town itself got a notice. Your legislators from this area got a notice.
No.
They did.
No.
Yeah.
I called the city office today and asked if they knew about this meeting, and they said they didn't know anything.
They got a personal notice.
And if there is a mix-up with the notices, we'll publish the results of this paper as well. And if there are a lot of comments that the community doesn't do the big outlier, we can come back down and talk about the results.
I don't know what else we can do here. I'm sorry. I mean, like I say, we were hoping for a big crowd, but... And I don't know if it was a notice or if it was just something else going on tonight. I know the principal said he had a ball game to go to, so maybe that took people away. So.
And even if you open that up, that would still be, papers would still have right to protest or
yeah. They still go through that public process. It's just allowing you the opportunity to file there. And we would hope that the growth is occurring gradually enough here that we could monitor. You know, if there were some problems, we could respond to that. I would think. Any other comments or questions? I guess that concludes it.
Do you have anything else, Jamie?
Appreciate your attendance.
I do.
And please let your neighbors know about this. So